I listen to NHPR because it opens up my world.
Peg Hendel of Waterville Valley is a proud member of NHPR's Leadership Circle.
I really value the fair and well-researched and well-balanced information that I get. That's something I just had to support.
You too can join NHPR's growing family of Leadership Circle members when you invest $100 a month into the statewide news service you trust at nhpr.org/leaders.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. In most major American cities, you'll see food trucks parked on street corners serving all manner of meals, from the standard hot dog to vegan rice bowls. New Hampshire's food truck scene isn't nearly as robust. Still, it's unique and growing. And like all New Hampshire entrepreneurs, these businesses have had to adapt due to the pandemic, in some instances thriving, in others struggling. Today in The Exchange, Granite State food trucks. Exchange listeners, we welcome your questions. Do you own a food truck, or have you thought about owning one? If there are food trucks in your city or town, how do you see them fitting in with the local restaurant scene? Our email is exchange@nhpr.org, and our phone number is 800-892-6477. Our guests are Dan DeCourcy, owner of Up in Your Grill, a barbecue food truck based in Merrimack. He travels around southern New Hampshire. Dan, it's great to have you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Laura.
And also with us, Chris Kozlowski. He's based on the Seacoast. He owns Chef Cause's Crescent City Kitchen and Cause's Hot Box, serving Louisiana Cajun and Creole food. Chris also started the Northeast Food Trucks Group. And Chris, it's great to have you too. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, so Chris, I'll start with you first. How did you get into the food truck business?
Funny you asked. So I started in the restaurant world, actually. I did a little bit opposite of how some people want to do it. I owned two restaurants in Dover, New Hampshire. One was called Crescent City Bistro and Rum Bar back in 01 to 05. And then in 04, I bought the old Firehouse One building and turned it into Orchard Street Chop Shop Prime Steakhouse. Chef owner of those two restaurants for almost 17 years in Dover. And I kind of joke around that owning a restaurant's like buying a boat. The two best days are the day you buy it, the day you sell it. And so I did that, and then I decided I just got burned out, had two kids, had enough, and still wanted to cook, and sold the second restaurant, the Orchard Street Chop Shop, and after a lot of conversation with my wife and family, decided to take a plunge into the food truck world.
Wow. Well, in a minute, I'll get your perspective on just how different it is. Dan, how about you? What's your sort of origin story there with food trucks?
Sure. Well, like Chris and a lot of food truck owners, you know, I got my start in restaurants, you know, as a young guy working in the kitchen, actually doing just about everything in a restaurant, right? Working front of house, back of house. But then, you know, that was when I was a young guy. I got into a career in an office job, spent about 20 years behind a desk, had a great time there, but, you know, I never lost the passion for food. And for food service. So when the opportunity came up for a second chapter, I decided, you know what, let's do food trucks. So I jumped all in and, you know, haven't looked back since, really enjoying it.
Wow. So when did you make that sort of mid-career shift in?
Yeah. So let's see, I think it was 2017. Like I said, I was in an office job, had been there for same company for about 19 years. And unfortunately, you know, there was some layoffs. I got caught up in it and did that whole, you know, midlife reevaluation, you know, what do I want to do? So I decided, you know, go with passion, go with the passion project. And, you know, I joked that when I first started this, I joked that I would work twice as hard being a small business owner and make half the money. And it's more like working four times as hard for a quarter of the money, but I still love it.
Wow. Okay. So we're going to have to talk about that for sure. And why did you choose, Dan, a food truck versus a traditional restaurant?
Well, I looked at traditional restaurants. I even, you know, went to a number of different locations. Now I was very passionate about barbecue. I competed while I was working in the office world. On weekends, I was competing in barbecue contests. So I wanted to open a barbecue restaurant. That's where I started to look. Yeah, I checked out some places in downtown Manchester. I looked in Milford, my hometown of Merrimack. But then, you know, as I really should give credit to my wife, she was the one who, she kept saying food truck, food truck, food truck. And, you know, I started to listen like a smart guy does. And the more I looked into it, the more I just loved the idea of it. You know, kind of the, I guess it appeals to the, you know, to the make my own way freedom of it, you know. Hitting the streets, being in different places, the flexibility. So I like I said, I jumped right in.
Wow. So Chris, you told us that you were in the regular restaurant business for 17 years. How is being in a food truck different? And do you, like Dan, Chris, work four times as much for a quarter of the money?
It's funny. First of all, I have to mention what Dan said, there's different types of food truck people. And there's many of us out there that have some sort of lot that either have not so much a midlife crisis, but a change at some point that you say, okay, you need to reevaluate your life. And kind of when I owned restaurants, year after year, I hear, Daddy, you're going to miss next year's soccer tournament and this and that. And finally, after a while, you just got to kind of reevaluate and see what you want out of life a little bit. So I hear you with what Dan's saying a little on at certain point of life. Same with me. It was like, is this really what I want to do? And the food truck world was that option. I was lucky enough to sell my restaurant. So it really helped me get to this point, take some time off to reevaluate what we want to do. And it is true. The sales aren't as crazy as a restaurant, but you have a lot more control over things such as your overhead and all that. So it can definitely be enjoyable and rewarding. And for me, I mean, at a restaurant where I was working 70, 80 hours a week, having to practically live there, I'm not in a situation that I have to do that anymore, which is really nice.
Yeah.
Well, and we'll talk in a moment about, you know, how the pandemic affected both of you. Lots of changes there. But in a normal year, Chris, you know, what type of business do you do? Where do you park your truck and so forth? So how do you operate in a normal year?
Sure. So there's different, every food truck has a different style on how they operate their trucks. We are one of the trucks that do not do stationary places. We do mainly events, both catered events, corporate events, Boogie and Blues up in Thornton, New Hampshire, these types of big events, typically non-COVID, the non-COVID time. And then there's a lot of food trucks that do the Monday through Friday, same time, same place. It's kind of what your style of business is when it comes to that. So I like the enjoyment of being able to pack up the truck and say, okay, we're going up here for the weekend to this and camping and selling food to this big group. Whereas others, you want that stability and same place and build business in the one spot.
So in a normal year, Chris, you would sort of travel around?
Yeah, normally we would. We travel to, normally, before, say in 2019, almost every weekend was booked with some certain event somewhere. So one weekend we'd be in maybe Manchester doing something, another weekend we'd be in Conway, another following weekend here and there. And then after during the week we would be possibly corporate, a lot of corporate gigs, schools, things like that. So usually you're traveling around the state, or we are anyway, gig to gig, and just finding new things all the time.
Yeah, festivals and gatherings, yep, and special events and so forth. How about you, Dan, in a normal year?
Yeah, in a normal year, I guess the time machine back to 2019, right?
Right, the before times, as we call it. Yeah,
exactly. A lot like Chris, we travel around, sometimes it might be just a small local event, sometimes, much bigger, food truck festival kind of thing, or a big town event, like anniversary, 200 town anniversary, that kind of thing with parades and we're 4th of July. So we travel around from, town to town, city to city, event to event. That's the kind of the public side of it. Then there's the more private events, the catering. We did a lot of those, you know, so on the weekends, you might be doing those big fairs or festivals. And on a Wednesday, you might get invited to, you know, a big office park, or, you know, you might get hired by, you know, a manufacturing company to come feed their employees. And, you know, it was a lot of fun. So during the week, you keep busy with a lot of those catering. And on the weekends, you travel around to different events.
I want to remind listeners that we are talking about food trucks today in The Exchange, and we'd love to hear from you if you have a favorite food truck in your area, or you'd like to see these expand in our state. Also, if you've ever thought about running a food truck, you can give us a call too. Our number is 800-892-6477. Again, 800-892-6477. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. So, okay, let's go there, guys. How did the pandemic affect you, Dan? You know, what was the immediate hit to your business, and then how did you adapt?
Yeah, so, you know, and I think Chris hit a good, you know, point about every food truck has somewhat of a different service model or business model. We're all really unique in the mix of different things we do. Now, as I think Chris and I are very similar in that we did all the events, well, one day they were just all canceled. Yeah. You know, we woke up in one morning in mid-March, you know, started getting the emails, private, you know, those business events that I was talking about during the week, you know, business said, hey, we're going to remote. So we're canceling the barbecue we wanted to do in June, you know, and all the fairs and festivals. So over the matter of a couple of weeks, you know, I just get email or phone call after phone call. And 100% of my business was canceled. Pretty shocking. And you know, we weren't alone. I mean, a lot of businesses had the same kind of impact. Now, to react to it, you know, we had to completely change everything. It was almost like starting a new business. So instead of you know, going around, traveling around, we pivoted to roadside. So Chris had said, you know, some trucks stay in one place. So we pivoted to that model. And oddly, we did really, really well the first couple months. April and May of last year, of 2020, those were record sales for me. And it was shocking to me. I mean, I thought I was going to have to hire, you know, some more folks. You know, we're just a small family run truck. But it was really, really crazy for a while there. Then we had the exact opposite summer that we would normally have. Normally, you're working around the clock, you know, doing these events and, you know, public and private events. But once restaurants opened for, you know, outdoor dining, it was great to see the restaurants coming back online. But, you know, it kind of took a big hit to, you know, my window sales. So I had the slowest, say, June, July, and August that of any season that I've done so far. Then later in the year, it did. Usually, you know, in the fall, you're tapering off and you're getting less and less business. And I had the exact opposite. I had a pretty good uptick as businesses started to see, in particular, the corporate or the business events. They had missed their, you know, missed their summer barbecues, missed all their summer events. So they started inviting food trucks, you know, and paying us to come and feed their employees for different events and parties and whatnot. So I had a big uptick in catering in the fall. Now I should also mention that that's just the business, the kind of the revenue side of it. Yeah. On the business function side, we had to change all of our processes. So before, you're handing out a meal and a boat for, you know, at a fair that someone's going to carry and eat right there. Suddenly I'm packaging family meals for four. So my entire menu had to change. All of my packaging had to change, all our processes. So we used to have, for example, you know, forks, knives, napkins, sauces, things on the shelf outside. Well, you couldn't have that in a pandemic, have self service. So we had to, now we need sauce cups, and we need ketchup packets, and, you know, for utensil sets that go into the bag. We needed bags. We didn't have, you know, so it was just a completely revamping of the business for 2020.
Oh, wow. I can totally see what you're saying. Yeah, like starting a whole new business. And I'm struck by what you said. Like, it used to be, you know, somebody comes to your window, you give them the food, and they basically, you know, walk to the nearest bench and eat it. Like that was the assumption.
Exactly.
And then you had a whole new, you know, type of service people wanted. They wanted a take home meal. Is that what you're saying there, Dan?
Exactly. Exactly. So it was just a whole different service model. You know, Chris brought up the point, you know, different food trucks do different things. Well, we had to shift the to a, you know, a different model of, or mode of business, so to speak.
Wow. So Chris, how about you? I mean, how did the pandemic affect you right off the bat? And how did you adapt your business model? It's really interesting to hear Dan's story. Funny. Yeah.
I went somewhat in a little bit different direction. Same thing as Dan was saying, once we got, heard the pandemic and they shut everything down back in March, pretty much same thing, 100% of all business for the summer in New Hampshire, every last event we had 100% canceled. So we know it was serious, something was going on. So instead of getting nervous about it and all that, I actually personally never, one of my longtime goals was to get into carpentry. And I actually did a lot of odds and ends jobs here and there and kept myself busy for the summer getting projects done that I haven't cooked in 31 years and took the summer off from not cooking for the first time pretty much ever. So for me, it was very rewarding in that sense. But as Dan says, it went both ways. You had food trucks out there that did do very well once the shock of the pandemic was over, that people, because they couldn't eat inside, were looking for these food trucks as the option to feed their employees and that sort of thing. And then you had other trucks that, with losing all the business, that was their sole income. And you had some food, a good amount of food trucks that were selling or getting out of the business to do something different. So we took the summer off. And then we got called out for the Crescent City Kitchen for a couple events, finally on Labor Day weekend. And my family, same thing, we all talked and we said, how long should we be hold ourselves down from going back out and taking the chance with the food trucks, not knowing with the pandemic? And we finally made a decision altogether to go back out Labor Day weekend for a couple events. And as it's weird for us, as Dan was saying, we did more sales in 3 months from September, October to Thanksgiving than we did in almost two-thirds of the year in 2019. Yep. It was that busy.
That's amazing. What's behind that, yeah, Chris? That's so interesting.
Well, so part of it wasn't just not as much nothing. It's funny, nothing for events, really too much open to the public. It was more we were able to get a couple contracts at some local schools to help offset student needs for food service, and that was a big part of it. And then other things outdoors, anything outdoors, we finished at a tree farm on Thanksgiving weekend out in the middle of nowhere in Farmington called Conley, and had the busiest weekend I think since 2019 out at a tree farm for 3 days, and we ran out of food every single day for 3 days. So everybody's antsy to get out. The social distancing can be practiced out there. And it was just an amazing 3 month run. So it is true. I mean, it's different food trucks experienced it in different ways. But I think that if people stay with their trucks and business and all that, I think with the whole pandemic, you're really going to see a lot of explosion in food trucks this summer with events and whatnot.
Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah, go ahead, Chris. Sorry about that.
No, I said, especially outdoor events. People, I think, are really going to be antsy to get out again. I mean, the whole thing with the COVID, as Dan says, I mean, we had to change our business practices as well. Tables for social distancing, hand sanitizers everywhere, packets of ketchup, mustard, relish, all that. I'm thinking with the vaccines and all that, we'll go back to normal, hopefully by the end of the summer, but it's wait to be seen.
Well, fingers crossed, right? And I have one more just pandemic-related question for both of you. And Dan, to you first, what about supply chain problems? Because I've heard from businesses all year that, you know, suddenly these things just come up. I remember one business owner just saying, I never needed, you know, X before, and all of a sudden I needed X and I couldn't get it. So how about you, Dan? Did you have supply chain problems?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. There was a couple different impacts. The first is just cost. some products just skyrocketed. For example, you use a lot of gloves, you know, food service gloves. You know, you might take them on and off between building meals and whatnot. And those went from, I used to buy a case of 1,000 for, I don't know, $30. Now they're about 130, you know, and that you know, that's a big impact. Brisket for a while, with the meat packing plants, some of the problems that we're having, it was hard to, and that's really the second problem is finding product. You know, that's one hurdle, but the cost of, say, example, brisket, there was 1 month in the summer where it quadrupled in about 2 weeks. All of a sudden it
quadrupled.
Yeah. You know, and what do you do? You know, you're faced with the thought, do I take it off the menu? I mean, you know, I got a pretty good brisket following. A lot of my regular customers love it, but I can't lose money on it, you know? So do I raise the price, you know, and maybe lose some customers over that. So it a lot of hard choices. But back to the second point was finding product. Sometimes it would just disappear. I think we all remember going to the grocery store and there'd be no chicken, right? Well, the same thing was happening for food trucks or restaurants. Your supplier just wouldn't have it. And next thing you know, you're running around scrambling. You know, I think I kept you know, a couple cases of hot dogs on hand at all time, just in case. You know, if nothing else, I guess I'll switch, you know, and sell some hot dogs. So it was really trying. Fortunately, I managed to pretty much get through and find everything I needed, but it was a huge challenge for most of the summer.
Yeah, I'm struck by the skyrocketing cost of gloves. All of a sudden, you had to buy a whole bunch of those, and a quadruple increase in brisket costs, and that's definitely got to have an impact. Chris, I want to ask you about that too, but first let's go to our listeners, because Steve is calling in from Laconia. Steve, welcome to The Exchange. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Thanks so much for having me. Sure. I just wanted to give a shout out to Nourish Food Truck. They were at Longview Farm in Plymouth last year, and they are just a fantastic food truck. You know, fun during the pandemic with the kids. Last summer, we would always take them up for a fossil fuel adventure and head up there, and it was just fantastic being able to eat in a restaurant, but not in a restaurant. Being able to look out at the mountains and the farm around you, they're all local, and they use locally grown food and everything. It's just fantastic. So food trucks are a fantastic thing in this area.
Steve, it's great to hear from you. And Chris, it kind of reminds me of the story you told about being at a tree farm. And, you know, I hadn't even thought about that. But people do go to these outdoor spaces, and all the better if there's a food truck. Did you experience supply chain problems as well, Chris?
So it's a couple points. I actually, because I heard a lot about them with the food service running into issues and all that, but because I took the summer off, once we got back into it Labor Day weekend, it didn't really have a problem. I mean, you did have a problem, things like your hand sanitizers, gloves, that nature, but the type of stuff that we serve. And I think it's indicative of whatever the food truck is selling for food, because another friend of ours that has a barbecue truck on this side of the state said the same thing as Dan did about the high cost of beef brisket and things like that. Chicken, other things, I mean, there were points of the summer that they couldn't give them away because the once some of these corporations came back online and the restaurants were closed, they had to be able to get those out and sell them because they still had all the product there. So there were points of the summer towards the end that you could find chicken thighs for 29 cents a pound in some places. So but at the beginning of the whole thing, absolutely, it was through the roof. We weren't really affected by that ourselves much. Once we got back into the swing of things in the fall, things were pretty normal for us. But also, Steve was saying, I believe Nourish, they're one of our groups on our page, and they do a really nice job from everything I've seen, and that's great. One other thing I'd mention too for food trucks and all that is that you kind of have to start thinking outside of the bun when it comes to what you want to do for events. And that was the Christmas tree farm was just something that I'm like, there's not really a lot going on this time of year. maybe I'll just reach out to do something different, to think outside a little bit. And I'm like, maybe Christmas Tree Farm would be a great place to set up a truck, see with people going out and all that, cutting down their tree. And just, we scored with that. So that was a good show, a good call for us.
Well, thanks again for calling, Steve. And we have to take a very quick break. But when we come back, we'll talk about logistical hurdles for food trucks in New Hampshire in particular. There are different rules and regulations in different cities and towns. And from what I understand, that's an issue for food trucks. And we'll take a lot more of your calls and emails. So keep them coming in. Our number is 800-892-6477. And our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Back in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, New Hampshire's food truck scene. It's not like New York or DC, but it is unique and growing. And we're talking with food truck owners around the state about their business and how they see themselves as part of our culinary landscape. Exchange listeners, if you own a food truck or you have ever thought about running a food truck, let us know. If there are food trucks in your city or town, how do you see them fitting in with local restaurants? Email us. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or call 800-892-6477. We're talking with two food truck owners, Dan DeCourcy of Up In Your Grill Barbecue Truck, based in Merrimack. He travels around southern New Hampshire. And Chris Kozlowski, he's owner of Chef Cause's Crescent City Kitchen and Cause's Hot Box. He's based on the seacoast. And both of you, here's an email from Diane, who says, my daughter is planning a wedding in our yard and was thinking about food trucks, 150 people. Any thoughts about the feasibility of this idea? And I think I'll throw that to you, Chris. What do you think?
It's funny because she's about the 10,000th person who brought that idea up this year.
Really?
Yeah, they're huge these days. And it's kind of funny because that was one of the points I wanted to make, was some of the misconceptions about food trucks and whatnot. One of them now, and things have changed over the years, but to answer her question, yes, food trucks are very popular right now for weddings. We're booked half of the weekends in the summer with weddings that have been postponed from last year, and everybody wants food trucks at their weddings. In fact, if you're getting married this year, you'll be hard pressed to find food trucks that are free to do weddings. One of the misconceptions that people, I think they're over now, is that if the budget's not as high as you could go, say, to a local wedding venue to have a wedding for 100 people, like they said, 150, to let's go with more of a lower budget, go to food trucks, that's not necessarily the case anymore. You're talking, most food trucks are full caterers as well. So it's be prepared to pretty much, I mean, if you're doing weddings, you're talking starting probably at $30, $35 a head and up for most. You can find others that may be a little more value oriented, but they're big business right now for the food truck world.
Wow. And, you know, Dan, Chris mentioned common misconceptions around food trucks, that it's going to be really cheap. What do you think, Dan? What are some of the stereotypes about food trucks?
Yeah, you know, and he's right. Food trucks are really versatile. So like a lot of folks, you know, see food trucks as downtown on the street. But, you know, the food trucks do just about everything. Weddings is a great example. You know, smaller events or a lot of catering. You know, so, and as Chris mentioned, some food trucks are full service caterers even. So, yeah, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of misconception around what we do. But, you know, if you're thinking about doing it for a wedding, I think that's a great idea. And as Chris said, it could be really hard. So my advice to everyone out there, if you're looking to book catering you're looking to book a food truck, do it now, because it's filling up really fast. All that pent up demand from last year, Chris said he's filled up half the summer, same with me, with stuff from last year, you know, weddings that were put off for the year or other events. So definitely start making some calls.
Well, so, and if I yeah, could,
sure.
If I could just add in on the misconception part before we move on, is a
couple. One is the big thing in the old days are the term roach coaches. That's completely gone at this point. Most food trucks for every event, they are usually, if you do events in different cities, you're almost inspected on a weekly basis. So most food trucks are going to be cleaner than most restaurants. In fact, because it's the nature of the beast where you go. So that was one point I wanted to make. Another one was that another misconception is that a lot of people want to do events and food truck festivals that are new at this and want to say, okay, we'd like five trucks here. We are going to bring you in and we're going to charge you $200. So what's going on now after the pandemic is that there's so many locations, such as things like campgrounds and thinking outside of the bun, that want food trucks for free, that a lot of food trucks, your top ones in the state, don't really aren't really going out to look for these paid events anymore. They're looking for these things like campgrounds and side of the road operations and things like that, where we don't have to shell out in the old days a couple thousand dollars to do a big festival or $1,000 to do a fair, that sort of thing. So I think that landscape's going to change in the future.
Go ahead, Dan. Did you want to jump in?
To build on that, I know after shifting my business model last year, I don't think I'll return to large paid events. You kind of look at the numbers and you realize, there's other ways. And, so it's definitely a shifting environment.
So large paid events, Dan, means like festivals and fairs where you have to pay, $1,000 to even show up.
Yeah, exactly. So you start to do the math and you realize, I did really great one year, 2017. I killed it. I made, we made a lot of money. Then 2018 rained and, it didn't do so well. So you start to average it out and you start to scratch your head and wonder, is it worth it to, pay a lot to be at a location? What's the return on that investment? And there's so many alternatives now, as Chris was saying, with, we're really sought after commodity and folks want us there and will invite us for free or if it's catering, will pay us. It's much better to take a paid catering gig on a Saturday than maybe pay for the possibility you might make money. But what if it rains?
Sure. Yeah. Wow. Well,
totally agree with that, Dan. It's right now. I mean, I'm still getting calls for this event for 20-25%. And it's like, you gotta be kidding me when we can go do a corporate gig where you make almost as much money at a corporate gig, but they want you there and there's no fee to pay it. Yeah. That's a big thing. If you're doing an event, don't try to charge the food trucks fees, especially since the food trucks are the draw to most events.
Yeah. Sounds like you guys have lots of other options. Well, and speaking of different models and different places to be, I want to bring in Gary Leach now. He's owner of Congdon's Donuts and a food truck park called Congdon's After Dark, which operates in York, Maine, and features many New Hampshire food trucks. And Gary, a big welcome. Thanks for being with us.
That's awesome. Glad to be here. And Dan, Chris, love what you guys do.
So, Gary, hey, what is a food truck park?
So what we did, we have a restaurant, and we're actually in Wells, Maine, not York, Maine.
Oh, you're in Wells, Maine. Okay, I apologize.
Yeah, we're right on Route 1. That's okay. But what we ended up doing was shutting down the restaurant at night because we're a breakfast and lunch place, Congdon's Donuts. And then we ended up setting up this food truck park where, I was kind of going through the town and finally got them to let us have 10 trucks per night. Had to set up the power and get all the permits and stuff going and find the parking. That's the hard part. But it's really taken off. I don't know if Dan has been at Congdon's After Dark, but I know Kaz has quite a few times. And it's a real fun atmosphere. You're kind of intimate. Everybody was facing in before the pandemic, and, it was kind of like a festival or a fair type of setup. We had a bar set up on the property. Actually, we ended up having to have two bars set up because it got so busy at night. We can park 250, and I'm actually back in planning board to try to get another 100 for this summer just because the numbers go nuts. And we're extremely weather dependent. When I was listening to those guys talk, rain just wipes out any type of food truck business, pretty much completely. We are very weather dependent.
Sure. But Gary,
If somebody wanted to park at your food truck park, like how much would you charge them? Because Chris and Dan were talking about, you know, the fees that they're sometimes charged, and they're starting to say, forget it.
Yeah. Ours is very reasonable, and we offer, you know, the power to plug in. We offer bathrooms. We offer picnic table cleaning. You know, the trash we take out every night. So we offer some things with our park. And, of course, the bar is the kicker there, whereas we have the license. But our fees run anywhere from $50 to $150, depending on what kind of a night we are expecting.
Yeah, that's a lot less than what they were talking about before. Yeah, go ahead, Gary.
Yeah, yeah. In some nights, you know, if the weather's kind of iffy, we actually do a no fee. You know, we kind of play with that by ear. We have closed down before, you know, if it's due to just poor, because not much happens at a food truck park. But it's a really cool, it's a cool setup. And having the 10 trucks, we actually have 25 trucks in rotation so far this year. And pretty much all of those trucks might spend 1 or 2 or 3 days and then move on and have another truck take their place later. So the venue kind of changes constantly, which really makes it kind of cool and upbeat. Fun, just fun stuff.
Yeah, well, and that area where you are, you know, Wells and York and Kittery, I mean, that place is just packed with tourists, and probably even more so last year when everybody wanted to be outside. What are you anticipating for this year, Gary? You know, sort of pandemic's not over, but people are feeling a little bit better. I mean, what are you expecting? What are you hoping for?
Last year, our numbers were about the same, actually, last year, just because I think it was the pandemic and that outside venue. You know, most guests were a little more appreciative of the being outside part. Well, May 24th, Maine can do 100% outside venues again. So I think I'm going to swing it back into the horseshoe. Last year, we kind of kicked the horseshoe back out and put all the people spaced out outwards instead of having them all in. But I think this year we're going to kind of try to go back to that inwards mode, because it's a lot more intimate. It's just very fun atmosphere. You know, you get the music going, and then the balloon people are, you know, dressing up the kids, and then we get the chalkboard going on, so the kids are all running around. Very, very family orientated type of venue we are.
Yeah, and Gary, actually, hold on a sec, because I want to ask the other guests and you about sort of local rules and regulations. From what I understand, there's a lot of variation there. So, Chris, to you first, what are the statewide regulations regarding food trucks, or is it all local?
Sure. So first of all, I want to mention it's great to hear Gary. Gary, good to hear you again. We'll see you this summer. Wanted to first say before I go into that I operate a private food truck page that has been able to really pull the food truck world just for food truck owners in the northern New England area together. And it's all, we only allow just food truck owners in this page. But I have to say, on the outside of the food trucks themselves, that what Gary's done in Wells is unprecedented. It's really something amazing there. He's built this donut shop into doing something different at night. And we were fortunate enough to be a lot bigger part of the first full year. I guess it was the second year of trucks, but when they started bringing in about 10 trucks a night. And I mean, this was the place to be on the Seacoast, Wells. This was like bumper to bumper. You'd hear, I mean, it was unfortunate, but you'd hear an accident probably every night out in front of Congdon's, because it was that busy of a place. But I mean, this is something that everybody's trying to copy. I was in Vermont yesterday and somebody mentioned something about food trucks. And they said, oh, do you know that place over in Maine in Wells called Congdon's? I said, yes, we're there. So we're back this summer. We took last summer off. We got 6 days there. I'm wicked excited about going. And I just think that what Gary, Adam, and the family's doing there is unprecedented. It's people are trying to copy it, but it's tough with the spot they have there.
Well, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, as they say. So what about the state of New Hampshire, Chris? Are there any statewide rules and regs around food trucks?
So you'll probably have to cut me off on this one, because I could spend a whole exchange just talking about this. But
pretty much the way it works is that there's no shortness of red tape in the food truck world. There's I'd say the same, if not more, than if you own a brick and mortar business. You need state, if you're operating outside. So in the state of New Hampshire, there's 15 or 16 self-inspecting cities, which means they have their own health inspectors. If you are operating outside of the state and in this outside of these cities in the state, you need a New Hampshire state permit. If you go to, say, Rochester, Dover, Concord, Portsmouth, Manchester, you also need to get a health permit to do business in those cities as well right now. So technically, if you're doing all these cities, you need tons and tons of permits. You need hawkers and peddlers, both for the state. You need hawkers and peddlers typically for every city, which is very redundant because it's checking your background the same way the state already has. And then on top of that, you need to have your, a lot of towns have fire inspections, and then serve safe. You need a serve safe inspection or a serve safe class. You need to take an approved health coordinator, what have you. So it's a decent amount of red tape to get going. I mean, the fun part about running a food truck's great, but there's still a lot of work to it. So there's actually legislation that started before COVID came in that we're trying to streamline the whole program in New Hampshire to hopefully doing one food truck health permit and one food truck hawkers and peddlers permit. But it's kind of been on hold since COVID.
Well, I can see what you're saying there, though, to have to get all those different permits for every single town would be problematic, to say the least. I want to take another call, gentlemen. There's a couple people who want to jump into our conversation. And Austin's calling from Keene. Hi, Austin. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having
me.
Yeah, it's been quite an interesting year with the food truck landscape changing due to COVID. And, you know, we've changed our business model. I'm listening to these guys talk about the ways that they've adapted. And we've all been faced with some pretty extraordinary challenges. We were a events-based business, essentially. We built our business model around being on the road all the time, being a truly mobile unit. And we had totally filled our calendar up for last year. In fact, we had very few openings, and then they all evaporated pretty much instantly. And during the first couple of weeks, it was like, hey, you know, this will all pass soon and we'll get back to normal, flatten the curve thing. And then as things went forward, it became evident that you know, the business that we had come to know and planned for was not the one that we were going to be operating under anymore. So we had to kind of re-examine our whole structure, and we became a static food truck based in one location and had to build a community following and a menu around that rather than, you know, being a truck on the road all the time. So,
oh, that's interesting.
Ahead. As things have gone forward, we've grown to embrace that model, and this year we're actually keeping one truck in a fixed location and adding a second truck for events. And we're hoping that things get back to something like the economy we knew before.
Oh, Austin, that's really interesting. And just briefly tell us what kind of food your truck serves and where you are in Keene.
Yeah, so we have one truck, street savory food truck based at Modest Man Brewing, Main Street, Keene. And then the second truck is going to be primarily at Northlands Live, which was drive-in live, so a series of 45 concerts this year at the Cheshire Fairgrounds in Swansea. And our food's a little difficult to describe, but I actually best heard it described by a friend recently as a mobile gastropub, so kind of eclectic cuisine.
Well, Austin, it's great to hear from you, and good luck with this summer. I know so many New Hampshire businesses are hoping for better this spring and summer. Thank you for calling in today.
Thank you for having me.
And Gary, one last question for you, and then we have to let you go. What are you hoping for this summer? Sounds like you're pretty excited.
Yes, I'm thinking that we will actually be fairly busy, especially in that outdoor mode. We're planning on, you know, lighten up the crowds in the sky again, and hopefully that it'll stay as dry as it was last summer, and we can have all the food trucks here every night and just rock the food truck world. I'm really excited about it, actually. This is going to be fun.
Well, Gary, it's good to talk to you, and I'll try to get over to Wells and see what you're up to. Thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Please do. Yeah, please do. So far, we're the only food truck park in New England, so yeehaw. you know, it's a cool, very, very cool venue. Very cool.
Well, Gary, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Take care.
That's Gary Leach. He owns Congdon's Donuts and the Food Truck Park, as we heard, Congdon's After Dark, which operates in Maine and features a rotating cast of food trucks, including many from New Hampshire. Coming up, we'll hear from a food truck owner from the White Mountains. We'll get her perspective. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow, it's the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup. We'll talk with Senate Democratic Leader Donna Soucy about the state budget and a lot more. Join us for the News Roundup with host Peter Biello Friday morning, live at 9. Today, we're talking about food trucks and their particular challenges and many benefits of doing business in the Granite State. Our guests are Dan DeCourcy, owner of Up Your Grill Barbecue Truck, and Chris Kozlowski, owner of Chef Cause's Crescent City Kitchen and Cause's Hot Box. And listeners, you can join us with an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or phone call 800-892-6477. And Dan and Chris, I want to bring another voice into our conversation. Kimberly Harvey is with us. She's owner of Kimberly's Gluten-Free Kitchen, a food truck in North Conway. Kimberly, it's great to have you. Thank you for your time.
Thanks so much for having me.
So describe your food truck, Kimberly, and why you got into the food truck business.
Well, we are a 100% gluten-free facility, so we are actually able to cater to celiac individuals. So I know there's a lot of gluten-free buzz going around, and there's a lot of places that are now offering, you know, gluten-free items, which is great. But the one thing that makes us really unique is that we have no cross-contamination with potential gluten contaminants. So that is awesome, and people love that. My story is very similar to Dan's and a little bit of Chris's too, and that I was in and out of the restaurant business in my younger years and then went to have a very successful career in sales, and it was fun, and then started to realize, you know, I think it's time to do my own thing now. And my husband found out about 2008 that he was no longer allowed to eat gluten.
Oh, so there's the beginning of that. Go ahead.
Yep, there's the kicker there. So since 2008, I've been, you know, playing with recipes and experimenting, and it's a fun challenge to really try to come up with foods that are just everyday loves that don't taste like they're gluten-free.
So, Kimberly, we've heard from our other guests about the unique benefits, obviously, but also the challenges of operating in New Hampshire. Chris described, sure, you know, the myriad of rules and regulations and, mm-hmm, you know, going from town to town. Sometimes you have to, you know, get all sorts of different permits. What's it like to run a food truck in your region, in the White Mountains region?
Well, it is a little trickier because, you know, we are obviously a tourist destination. So when you take out July 4th to Labor Day weekend, which we are invaded, if you will, and it's, you know, obviously such a beautiful place to come to and why we live here, it can be a little bit of a struggle finding events or, you know, finding places to serve that are worthy, you know, because of all of the prep time and, you know, the out-of-pocket. So we have structured our business, if you would. I learned very, very early to work smarter and not harder. And so we tend to focus on, you know, larger events versus the roadside because that particular season is so limited up here. You know, just to put it into perspective, when you're looking at Rockingham and Stratford County compared to Carroll and Coos County, we have like less than 20% of the population up here that they have down there. So until we get the tourists that come to town, you know, roadside doesn't really pay out up here. And if you're going to do it up here, it's, you got 2 months to do it. So that's a little bit of a struggle is figuring out, you know, where are you going to go, you know, how are you going to make, you know, the money and have a good return. And then also we've got a little curveball in the town of Conway where one other food truck and then ourselves came on board in town in 2018, and we were the first on the scene. Well, they were kind of like, okay, well, what are we going to do with these guys when it comes to zoning? Because the planning board does a great job in keeping North Conway and our areas beautiful, you know. But they sort of threw us in with their existing permitting for events. So if you want to set up in the town of Conway, you literally have to be on private property only. Like, we can't just go set up at the Scenic Vista, you know, which is public or run by the state. We have to find private land, and we have to get an event permit. And that event permit allows you to be parked at that location for a maximum of 14 days within a calendar year. And you have to tell the town exactly which days you're going to be there. So, you know, that's a bit of a hurdle.
Wow. Well,
yeah.
There's
yeah.
so much more we could talk about, but we've got listeners sure. who want to jump into our conversation too.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
Dan, Chris, Kimberly, let's go back to our callers. And Caitlin's joining us in Portsmouth. Hi, Caitlin. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hello. How are you?
Good. Go ahead.
So I just kind of wanted to interject into the conversation. I actually co-founded and operate a nonprofit called Red's Good Vibes, and we're out of Portsmouth. And with the community support this year, we actually were able to purchase and now are operating a free food truck for those that are in need. And so when I heard Kong Dong's Donuts was here, you know, they were a big supporter of us and have really helped fund this mission. And we've been traveling through all of the permitting that all the other food trucks are kind of trying to go through, and have found it to be a arduous but pleasant process, and we're really excited. So I just wanted to kind of be a part of the conversation as well.
Wow, so a nonprofit food truck feeding people in need. Real quickly, Caitlin, because I'm curious, but we're running out of time.
Yeah.
Like, how does that work? Do you go park near homeless shelters, or how do you do that?
You know what? So the motto and the mission of Red's Good Vibes is to provide relief and support with no judgment and a kind heart. So we don't ask any questions. We pull up to areas that are easily accessible for those that might be, you know, experiencing homelessness. And we serve free food, no questions asked, from a menu. So we're providing dignity and choice. And, you know, we're able to serve. We actually work with the city of Dover quite often, and Hampton as well. They've been amazing to us and very supportive. And we've been able to do some events at some of their locations, like the train station and the police station down by the beach, and serve about 200 meals every time that we go out.
Wow. Well, I had not heard about nonprofit food trucks. I'm glad you called in, Caitlin. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. And us at Red's Good Vibes appreciate the community support.
So, Chris, Dan, Kimberly, one more question for all of you. Kimberly, you first. I mean, what do you hope for this year, especially after what you went through last year? Because from what I understand, it was a struggle. So what are your hopes for 2021, Kimberly?
Oh, that's a really good question. I guess my expectations aren't for everything to go back to normal. But, you know, to keep my employees safe, you know, while this is still out there, and to still have fun with it, and hoping that the events draw in a safe amount of crowd for us to you know, make ends meet, as well as keeping it all safe.
Yeah, it's a tricky balance, isn't it? You want people to come to the event so that you can sell your food, but large gatherings are still questionable. So how about you, Dan? What are you hoping for this year?
Well, I'm hoping it's going to be a stellar year. You know, there's as we talked about before, there's a lot of pent up demand, and I think folks are ready to have some fun, and food trucks being outside. You know, it's been a great alternative, and it will continue into this year. And So I think we're going to have a stellar year. The other thing is, you know, point that we touched on a couple times is just general reform around, you know, rules and regulations in the state. I'd love to see that get picked back up this year. I know last year, you know, government had a lot on their hands. So I get it that it didn't move forward. But, you know, maybe this year we can pick that flag up and run with it and make it easier and better for all of us.
Yeah, that's the bill that Chris alluded to last year to study food truck regulation, maybe streamline it a little bit. Real quickly, Chris, what are your hopes for this this spring and summer?
Well, I think that it is definitely going to be a changing landscape with things. From what I'm hearing, fairs may not be back, not just because they don't want to be, but a lot of the midways at fairs, they can't get the help with the H-2B visas to get midways up and running. So that might be an issue this fall.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah, for us personally, we are at pretty much close to capacity. We have, you know, in the past, my first year doing this, it was, we all know each other, a lot of us do in this world. Kim and I talk a decent amount. We all are like book at first every single weekend. And now, you know, there's enough events that keep popping up out there that we're probably 2/3 to 3/4 booked for the summer. But other weekends, you either wait until something big might come along, but they will. They'll fill it up. So we don't worry too much about it.
Well,
my last piece of advice is I
have to cut you off there. I do apologize.
That's fine.
the clock calls us to close it out. But Chris Kozlowski and Dan DeCourcy and Kimberly Harvey, was great to talk to all of you. I really appreciate you joining us today. Our program was produced by Exchange senior producer Christina Phillips. Thanks, everybody, for being with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.